time for a sofa upgrade? Introducing Anabe Sofas, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices. Every Anabe sofa is modular, allowing you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabe is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slide right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today. Sofas start at just $699 with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get early access to Black Friday now. The biggest sale of the year can save you up to 60% off, plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
I'm John Batser. This is the new John Batser Show. Josh Rogan, the Washington Post columnist, his new book, Chaos Under Heaven, Trump, Xi, and the Battle for the 21st Century, the story of the Trump administration's evolving policy towards China. Always double track, triple track, doubling back, never straightforward. But an event, February of 2018, March of 2018, Robert Lighthizer, the trade representative. Josh, what was the Lighthizer report? What is a 301 investigation?
Well, in early 2018, the Wall Street guys had lost their chance to make a quick deal. And Trump had turned to his national security people to say, we need to raise the pressure on Beijing and we need to come up with some tariffs. And the mechanics of that were handed over to U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, extensive experience in this area. And what he did was he compiled the most devastating report, government report to date about China's illicit trade practices. We're talking about unfair subsidies and intellectual property theft and all economic espionage, economic aggression of all kinds. And that was the 301 report. And what that does is that forms the basis of the tariffs that the Trump administration would impose that still remain to this day, by the way. Now, Robert Lighthizer was an interesting figure because he wasn't a super hawk. He wasn't aligned with Bannon or Navarro, but he wasn't a Wall Street click guy either. He wasn't friends with Steve Mnuchin. He was a trade guy, a trade hawk, you could say, but one that was focused on these very specific issues. And of course, once he had put forth this report, you know, that's accused China of all of these, I would say rightly accused China of all of these transgressions, that became the bar. That became the thing that the Chinese government had to address. And that had two big effects. One is that, you know, they couldn't really address it, you know, in the sense they were, we were asking at that point China to change its entire industrial policy and to stop its entire industrial, you know, strategy. And there's an argument that they were never going to do that anyway. But it also, so that meant the trade war would move forward. But it also meant that when they actually struck the deal at the end, that this was, again, Lighthizer back in the pole position. But we can get to that a little bit later.
The trade negotiation at this point has tariffs, has sanctions talk. There's sanctions talk. But what we're looking at is theft. IP theft, straight up theft, and the estimate in 2018, early 2018, was $50 billion annually. I'm sure it's much higher now. At the same time, the Trump administration is developing a national security strategy. Josh, what was the significance? Mike Pompeo is now Secretary of State, early 2018. John Bolton is National Security Advisor. Matt Pottinger is his deputy. They develop what they call the Indo-Pacific Command. What's the significance of the name change? Why is the correct name important here?
Right. Well, you know, it goes back to what you said, calling things by their names. Because, you know, once we had the trade war had started, you know, this entire idea that you have to never speak of the bad things that the Chinese government are doing, lest they would, you know, cause a cold war or a conflict, or the whole relationship would just go kaflooey. That whole idea was put to rest, you know. And remember, there was very serious people making this argument, including people like Mnuchin, who said, "Oh well, we can't have tariffs. That will be the end of the relationship, and the Chinese will walk away." Well, as it turns out, that wasn't the case. Okay, and they stayed at the table and they kept negotiating. So now, all of a sudden, Trump and people around him realized that we could do two things at once: we could raise the pressure on China, and at the same time, still negotiate with them. So once that became obvious, the ceiling was lifted and a lot of other things could move forward, including on the national security front. So then you had a whole team of national security people who were like, oh, okay, well, what can we do with this new sort of space in our policy? And one of the things that they did was to, you know, make unveil something that Pandur had been working on from day one, which was this idea of an Indo-Pacific strategy. And that was basically to take our Pacific strategy and add India to it. Okay. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense because India is the biggest democracy in the world and the counterweight in that region that can really bring a lot of economic and military and other kinds of power to bear. Now, that didn't always go perfectly, right? There's a lot of points in the story where mistakes were made. But, you know, there's a question over whether or not we really ever devoted the resources to that plan. But what was going on in 2018 was that, okay, well, now the trade war was on, which in a sense, you know, had its own momentum. But meanwhile, the national security people started to really get organized. And it took them a while to get their boots on. But once they had done that, they started coming out with all of these new strategies, national defense strategy, Indo-Pacific strategy, national security strategy. And the conventional wisdom at the time was like, oh, just ignore that. No, Trump doesn't read it. Nobody cares what the strategy papers say. But the truth is that inside the government, people cared and people read them. And it did have an effect, although that effect was seen slowly over time.
October 2018, Mike Pence, Vice President of the United States at the Hudson Institute in Washington, identifying a twin problem with China. Josh has mentioned one of them, the United Front influence. Michael Pillsbury, by the way, a China hand at the Trump administration, Josh reports, is in the front row. The second had to do with China retaliating, China interfering in American politics. How so, Josh? What did the vice president identify out loud? What did he name correctly?
Right. Well, you know, just the fact that the vice president of the United States was making a landmark speech in China was significant at that time. And no one at that level had made a speech to explain to the world what the Trump administration's China policy was. Now, it's also true that Trump didn't necessarily agree with everything that Mike Pence was saying at the Hudson Institute. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. The bottom line was that this was the clearest statement of the Trump administration's China strategy to date, and it was largely written by Matt Pottinger and another guy named Stephen Ford. And it's not a coincidence that Matt Pottinger was part of the Bingo Club, and he took many of those ideas and put them in to Pence's speech. And all of a sudden, all of the things that all of these people had been discussing, especially Chinese influence and interference operations, were now coming out of the mouth of the vice president in public. And what was funny about that is that, well, not funny, but more ironic funny is that, you know, Mike Pence then went on a tour of Asia, and I joined him on that tour. And we went to several countries to explain to our allies and partners and to meet with the Chinese to roll out this new idea that America was going to confront Chinese influence and interference operations and have this robust strategy and all the rest. And right after that tour, President Trump met with Xi Jinping at Buenos Aires at the G20 and undermined the entire thing. And according to John Bolton's book, told him that it would be totally fine if he wanted to put the Uyghurs in the camps, that it was the right thing to do, and basically, you know, confused everybody even more. So this was at once a statement of clarity, but that was quickly overtaken by the events, and those events were, the bumbling of the president himself.
So on the one hand, Mike Pence, the vice president, says, Beijing, the stalling game, we get it, it's over. No more stalling, no more promises. On the other hand, the president says, we're not bothered by internal affairs. We want to make a trade deal. And then the twist, putting both together. John Bolton is apprised that there's going to be a detention in Vancouver the next day. John Bolton, the National Security Advisor. He chooses not to tell the president about this. Who is detained and what is the significance of this, the economic war and the tech war and the national security war all colliding?
Right, right. So there they are, the presidents of the United States and China sitting at the dinner table discussing the trade war. And the president of the United States is not informed that the Canadians are about to arrest the CFO of Huawei, Ms. Meng, at the behest of the U.S. Justice Department. And John Bolton says in his book, well, he didn't want to bother the president about that at that time. But you can imagine that when the president found out that this had gone on during their dinner, he was very angry that he had been left out of the loop. And this is sort of the perfect, you know, Trump-China story, because it accurately brings to light sort of the chaos that was going on inside the administration. But in that chaos, there was intentionality, because as these national security officials were very worried that Trump was about to cut a bad deal, they were doing something that was actually going to make it harder for him to do that. And arresting the CFO of Huawei in the middle of a summit is a very controversial thing to do. And, you know, set aside whether or not she was guilty of the charges, you know, that was bound to have an effect on the relationship. But they did it anyway, and they didn't tell Trump. And then when he was very angry about it, it had the opposite effect of what he wanted. But it was too late. So the trade war and the tech war began under the most confusing sort of chaotic circumstances imaginable. And that set the stage for the next year of the U.S.-China competition, which only spiraled into more confusion in the midst of more competition.
Making a note here, Josh, though it's not the ambition of your book to also do Canadian evolving policies towards China, but immediately or soon after the detention of Ms. Meng, two Canadian citizens are detained and are still being held in China, what the Canadian government describes as hostage taking. So this was no longer just U.S.-China. It involved all of North America and a great deal of trade because of Canada's trade with China, an unsolved story. The Canadians need to name things too, Josh, not just the U.S.
Well, yes, and this is another example of the Trump administration shooting itself in the foot, because, of course, these countries, Canada, Europe, the frontline countries of Asia, are facing the same threats and the same challenges from around China. We are.
Just a moment, Josh. We'll continue in 2019. I'm sorry, I got too excited about your chronology. Josh Rogan, Washington Post, Chaos Under Heaven. I'm John Batchelor.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Hey, it's me, your heart. Mind if I pick the next song? Listen, even though we're eating better, people who've had one heart attack are at higher risk of another. But Repatha Evolocumab plus a statin lowers LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, and our heart attack risk. So let's talk to our doctor about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. View the important safety information in our banner. Listen to your heart. Ask your doctor about Repatha.
Ah, greetings from my bath, festive friends. The holidays are overwhelming, but I'm tackling this season with PayPal and making the most of my money. Getting 5% cash back when I pay in four. No fees, no interest. I used it to get this portable spa with jets. Now the bubbles can cling to my sculpted but pruny body. Make the most of your money this holiday with PayPal. Save the offer in the app.
Ends 12/31. See paypal.com/promo terms. Points can be redeemed for cash and more. Pay in four, subject to terms and approval. PayPal Inc. and MLS 910457.